Hey, Cliff Goldstein here. The other day I heard a radio report coming out of Iraq, and it was a horrible story. It told about how, you know, over there they're having these kidnappings. And in some cases, they actually kidnap these Iraqi women, and the family pays a ransom or whatever, somebody pays a ransom, and they let them go. Well, much to my horror, I'm driving home and I'm listening about how in many cases, these girls or these women, particularly unmarried, I guess maybe married or unmarried, who've been kidnapped, when they get home, their family feels they have an obligation to kill the women. They feel a moral obligation, almost a divine obligation, that these women have dishonored the family, even though they were kidnapped, and ultimately the father or the brother takes them out and kills them. Now, I don't know about you, but I'm driving home in my car, and I'm feeling this, and I'm hearing this, and I'm horrified by this. What kind of morality is this? But as you think about it, how can we stand in our position from our perspective and make a value judgment on something? It seems immoral to us, but who are we to be able to automatically look at something with our situation from our perspective and make a judgment on it? And that's a very interesting question, and it raises some important points that can get down to some fundamental things such as, well, even if there is a God or not. Now, what do I mean by this? Well, let me give you another example, something a little less horrific. I remember hearing a story about a 6-year-old girl from London took her first trip to France. And after the family collected the luggage, they got out of the car, and the little girl was standing at the curb, and she was horrified. She yelled, "Mommy, Mommy, they drive on the wrong side of the road here." Well, you know, she uses the word wrong side. Well, which is the right side of the road to drive on? That's almost like asking the question, what's more beautiful, Beethoven's Ninth or Ozzy Osbourne's Suicide Solution? Some people love Lucian Freud's art. Other people even question calling it art. In some cultures, you know, most cultures, people cook meals with pork. Some people believe they've been defiled by even touching a pig. And, well, some women who are, you'd almost say, are obscenely obese in one society are, quote, supermodels in another. Now, my point? Well, in certain contexts, the issue really isn't right and wrong, but culture, custom, and personal preference. Okay, that's fine. But what about morals? Are they as relative as, you know, one's preference for meaty thighs over skinny ones or for Ozzy Osbourne over Beethoven? Some people would argue yes. Let me read you a quote. I want to read you a quote from a guy named John L. Mackey. It's Ethics, Inventing Right and Wrong. He starts out his book with one line. There are no moral values. Boom. Just like that, there are no moral values. And, he said there are no objective values. No objective values. And Friedrich Nietzsche said there are no moral phenomena at all, but only a moral interpretation of phenomena. And though there's a certain logic to that position, it does carry with it certain kind of certain implications that we ought to take a look at. Let me give you an example one time. There was this atheist and this Christian were having a debate. And the atheist insisted that, you know, moral values were just human constructs. And the Christian insisted that, you know, moral values came from God. And so they got in this debate back and forth, and the atheists argued that nobody could claim one moral system was superior to another. Okay, so the Christian supposedly replied, "Kind sir, in some societies people choose to love their neighbors, in other societies they eat them. Which one do you prefer?" Okay, that's a pretty clear example, but it brings up a good point. You know, another example, a number of years ago in Germany, a Turkish woman, a mother of a 5-year-old, was shot to death at a bus stop in Berlin. And she was one of about a half a dozen Turkish women murdered in Germany by honor killings by their close relatives. said a German, you know, I think Der Spiegel, in the past 4 months, six Muslim women living in Berlin have been brutally murdered by their family members. Their crime, trying to break free and live Western lifestyles. Within their communities, the killers are revered as heroes for preserving their family dignity. Then the article goes on to say, how can such a horrific and shockingly archaic practice be flourishing in the heart of Europe? But I ask the question, horrific and shockingly archaic practice? How judgmental? How judgmental? If morals are kind of like art and music, if they're human creations alone, then how can these deaths, these honor killings in one culture, be crimes in another? Who has the right to stand and judge over what another culture believes is moral? You know, is not the German outrage felt over these mercy, these honor killings, you know, an interpretation and nothing more? I mean, if morality is created by humans, if it's purely a human construct, then calling honor killings or even cannibalism is wrong. It's sort of like calling preference for the Roomba over the tango wrong. Now, that J.L. Mackey quote that I had just given you, it brings out a certain point that if objective, there are no such thing as objective values. And if you agree with that, then I think that you have to agree in many ways that Friedrich Nietzsche, we all know the name Nietzsche, that Nietzsche was right. See, for Nietzsche, the situation was simple. He said in another place, the Christian God has ceased to be believable. Though Nietzsche was an unabashed atheist who hated Christianity, he once dubbed himself the Antichrist. Nietzsche nevertheless foresaw the profound and fearful consequences of this loss of belief. He understood that the West cannot give up on the Christian God and continue as if nothing happened. You know, that churches would become museums or crosses artifacts or priest shoe salesmen. This was all inconsequential, nothing else. Instead, Nietzsche saw all that leaned upon this God, all that leaned upon the institutions, all that grew up on this God and his moral commandments, all which nourished itself on this whole thing of God and his promises, all which understood itself in relationship to this God, this would all crumble, leaving hordes of refugees amid the decomposing corpse of deity. And yes, gods too, Nietzsche once said, decompose. Now, the question now that Nietzsche comes for this is it wasn't just that God, it wasn't just for Nietzsche that God vanished, you know, his famous God is dead thing. For Nietzsche, all metaphysics were dead. All belief in any overarching meta-narrative, any transcendence at all, any bond that could tie it all together and deliver it in a nice, neat package, it was all gone. You know, scientists are often looking for what they call a TOE, a theory of everything. And according to Nietzsche, this whole idea was ludicrous. Truth, said Nietzsche, was just canonized illusions, metaphors that had petrified, and traditions that had over time just become habits. For Nietzsche, the only truth is that there was no truth. The only certainty that there was no certainty. I want to read you a famous quote from Nietzsche. It's this famous quote about a madman who runs into a market with a lantern. Listen carefully to what he's saying here. How are we able to drink up the sea? Who gave us a sponge to wipe away the entire horizon? What did we do when we unchained this earth from its sun? Where is it moving now? Where are we moving now? Away from all suns? Are we not plunging continually backward, sideward, forward, in all directions? Is there any up or down left? Are we not straying through an infinite nothing? Do we not feel the breath of empty space? Has it not become colder? See, all he was saying is, we've severed ourselves from anything transcendent, from anything greater than above us. We've unchained the sun, you know, the earth from the sun. So where are we going? We're floating around. Whether there's a upward or backward or forward or backwards, where is it all? See, he understood when the Western world and his thinking severed itself from the Christian God, it severed itself from this mooring. You know, centuries earlier, Aristotle Aristotle understood that, said you can't understand anything without knowing its causes. And that must include humanity too. See, up until about a century ago, mankind mostly understood itself as coming in one way or another from God. Now mankind, we understand ourselves as slowly clawing our way and breaking free from the bones of some untutored primates. You know, and it's a pretty seismic shift in human self-understanding to look in the mirror, and rather than seeing the image of the Lord God Yahweh, creator of the heavens and earth, staring back at you, instead you have the latest variant of natural selection thrown in your face. This revised reflection and all that it does to the human ego and all that the sense of self-worth contains, and Nietzsche saw this, predicates of colossal consequences. Now, Nietzsche wasn't alone in seeing what's going to happen with this loss of God. Jean-Paul Sartre, probably the 20th century's most influential atheist, had a line. Let me read you this line from Sartre. Existentialism is humanism. He said here, the existentialist, on the contrary, thinks it's very distressing that God does not exist, because all possibility of finding values in a heaven of ideas disappears along with him. There can no longer be an a priori good, since there is no infinite and perfect consciousness to think it. Can you see the point? He's saying there is no God, there is no ultimate standard, and so there's no ultimate good. Now, he's not the only one. Philosopher Bertrand Russell, in Human Ethics and Society, Russell said, my book here slightly, let me read you Russell. He said, many traditional and ethical concepts are difficult to interpret, and many traditional ethical beliefs are hard to justify, except on the assumption that there is a God. Can you see the point? Again, there's got to be some sort of deity for there to be a foundation for morality. Atheist apologist J.L. Mackey argued that moral properties constitute such an odd cluster of qualities and relations that they are most unlikely to have arisen in the ordinary course of events without an all-powerful God to create them. So in other words, he's saying there couldn't have been any kind of absolute morality if there was no God, but Mackey was an atheist, so how did he solve the problem? He denied that the properties were there. And others, here's a quote from, this is kind of funny, this is Dostoevsky in The Brothers Karamazov. He's got Fyodor Karamazov saying, where does he say it here? He says, well, but you, without a God, are more likely to raise the price of meat if it suits you and make a ruble on every kopeck. Okay, again, the idea is there is no God, there is no absolute standard of right and wrong, so you can do sort of your own thing. So in this mind frame, truth, the truth, or good, whatever those terms now mean, no longer permeate the world as do, the Pythagorean theorem or the law of thermodynamics or Planck's constant. Morals are not like special relativity or general relativity. Facts of reality waiting for thousands of years for an Albert Einstein to kind of pull them out of the air. Okay, instead, morality of subjective and personalist fingerprints. It's mere cultural and personal biases, more dependent on childhood relationships than any kind of transcendent norms. There is no ought, only an is, and from this is, no ought can be absolutely derived. When with God dead, moral knowledge can't exist, only moral belief. Values are judged by their utility. Good gets the trains to run on time. Bad causes them to be late. Or even less fundamental, good is what you like, bad is what you don't like. Human senses, not divine commandments. Human appetites, not sacred texts. And human desires, not religion injunctions. These are the stuff that morality, good, evil, right, and wrong, are made of. Because there's nothing else. Truth is horizontal, not vertical. It's physical, not spiritual. It comes from mitosis, testosterone, and protein metabolism, not from, oh, the Father, Son, and Holy Ghost. Values have to be contrived among ourselves, concocted out of a boiling brew of human passion, and not revealed by some would say, some brooding omnipresence in the sky. And as players in the game, we make up the rules as we go along. We must, because the primates, supposedly our ancestors, didn't leave detailed instructions behind. Now, what am I saying here? Am I saying that Bertrand Russell, Friedrich Nietzsche, you know, Sartre and all the rest, you know, didn't know it was wrong to, say, torture little children? Of course I'm not saying that. Many atheists and secularists have been and still are good people, at times even better than their religious counterparts. I mean, after all, when was the last time you heard of an atheist strapping his body full of dynamite and taking out a city bus? That atheists and secularists can derive an inherently coherent moral system is not the issue. The issue instead is what they can't do. And what they can't do is derive an internally coherent moral system based on any transcendent or immutable absolutes, because, as they often absolutely assert, they don't exist. See what I'm saying? They can be moral and they can have moral systems. They just can't build them on anything absolute. It's as shifting as humans. You know, a system is only stable as its foundations. I mean, why build a house on pink elephants when nothing more than a purple turtle can knock it down? We work only with what's available to us. And for the secularist, the atheist, what's available is only the conditional. It's only the relative. It's only the human, nothing more, because there is nothing else. See, if values are derived from humanity, from human needs, from human nature, from human desires alone, because these things by nature are malleable, fluctuating, and transient, all moral systems based on them must be as well. And maybe that's good. Maybe morals shouldn't be based on these things. But you run into a problem if you do that. And here's the thing. So look, what is our option? Our option here is this. We've got two possibilities. We've got that there is a God who has given us a morality, or there isn't a God, and all morals are purely human constructs themselves, okay? This is what we're dealing with. Now, let's go for a moment. Let's go with the atheist view. Let's go with the view that there is no absolute, there is no God, and morals are all human creations. Now, if we do that, what are the implications of this? Well, let's work through this for a minute. Now, let me read you a quote. I'm going to read you a quote from Walt Whitman. So again, we got our two possibilities. Okay? Two possibilities. There is a God who has given us a moral set of right and wrong, or like many of the atheists we've looked at here, morality is a purely human construct. We create morality the same way we create, you know, art and so on. And let me read you Walt Whitman here. Only what proves itself to every man and woman is so. Only what nobody denies is so. Now think about that. Let me read that to you again. Only what proves itself to every man and woman is so. Only what nobody denies is so. In other words, only what everybody agrees is so, and only what nobody denies is so. Now, I find those words shocking and very fearsome and very worrisome. Let's think about this for a minute. Okay, we got our two options. Morality. We all believe, know there's some kind of morality out there. Okay? Now, where does it come from? Either it's purely a human construct, we make it ourselves, or morality comes from a God above us. I can't think of a third. Now, let's go with Walt Whitman's statement here. It's only what everybody agrees is so. Let's use a hypothetical example. Suppose the Nazis won the Second World War. And suppose they took over the world. And suppose in their vast propaganda machine, they convinced everyone, the whole world, that murdering Jews was a necessity. Okay? What, you know, using, you know, they convinced that murdering Jews, and suppose they were able to convince everybody in the whole world that they were right. Suppose they took the old Goebbels, got the whole world, and was able to get every human being in the whole world convinced that any man, woman, and child with one Jewish grandparent needed to be murdered. That was just a moral obligation for the good of the world, for the moral good of the world. This group of people needed to be eradicated. Suppose he did it. And suppose he convinced every human being, if every human being in the world was convinced that every Jew needed to be murdered. Could it be wrong? Would it be wrong? I mean, again, if morality is purely a human construct, if it's just something that we as humans alone create, then I don't see how logically, rationally, we could argue against that position. You see what I'm saying? If morality is put just in people, just in us, the same way we choose, you know, the kind of art we like, that, you know, or whatever, then how can you argue against it? Now, I don't know about you guys, I guess I'm Jewish, but I imagine most people would have an awfully hard time with that, you know? But then again, what option do you have if morality is purely human? If it's a purely human construct, then, you know, take something else. Suppose everybody in the world suddenly decided that people with red hair, anybody with red hair didn't deserve to live. If every human being became convinced of that, what option do we have but to say then they're right, they're morally right, everybody with red hair deserves to be murdered? And yet I sense that most people are not going to find that attractive. Most people are going to be very uncomfortable with that. But why? Why? Again, if morality is made from us, if it starts from the ground up, if it's something that we as humans create, then what other option do you have? And I want to read you something from Sophocles' play Antigone. The Antigone. If you know the story, you know, there's a revolt and her brother's killed and the king does not want anybody burying the brother. And Antigone feels this moral obligation to bury her brother. I mean, her brother died. I think in ancient Greece, you know, you were supposed to have a decent burial. And so she's before King Creon. And the king says, and the king is saying, Hood, how dare you? Who are you to go against my royal decree? My royal decree that your brother shouldn't be buried. And then what many consider the first argument for natural law, or natural moral law. Listen to this woman's response to the king. This was Sophocles, you know, 2,300 years ago. She says, sorry, who made this edict? Was it God? Isn't a man's right to a burial decreed by divine justice? I don't consider your pronouncement so important that they could just overrule the unwritten law of heaven. You are a man, remember. The divine laws are not just temporary measures. They stand forever. Now again, look at what's going on here. Look at what's going on here. King makes a decree, she disagrees with the decree, saying there's something that transcends it. And again, I ask you the question, if morality is purely human, if we make up our own morality, then what right do we have to talk about mercy killings as being wrong? If a woman is kidnapped in Iraq, doesn't her family then have the right in their culture, in their paradigm, to kill her when she comes back? Don't they have the right to do that? Again, I think many people would find that very, very disturbing. But again, I ask the question, why? Why? If morality is just purely human, if it's a purely human construct, then the only logical conclusion, the only sense, almost moral conclusion you could come to. Hey, if a society says that women who are kidnapped, they've dishonored the honor of their family, and then if they're released, the family has the right to, the family should kill them, then how could we sit there and say that's wrong? How could we, you know, when the conquistadors went over to Spain, went over from Spain over to Latin America, they were horrified by human sacrifices, and they went in and you know, overtook them because of the human sacrifices. But again, what gives people in one culture the right to stand on moral judgment on another culture? And then yet, how could we not stand in judgment on another culture? Another culture that's going to do some of these horrific things? I mean, how can we stand in judgment over Nazi culture? How can we stand in judgment over the Stalinist culture? Again, if you're logical, and you believe morality is purely a human construct, then the logical thing to say is, the Nazis want to kill Jews. Well, it's their society and their culture. They got the right to do it. I really can't say it's wrong. Another society, they want to kill people with red hair. They do. Another society, they want to eat them. Who are we to stand above them and say no? They might look at things in our society and be horrified by them, and they are. So this leaves the ultimate question then. If you're not comfortable with that, if you're not comfortable with the idea, well, if every human being in the world says it's okay to murder Jews, if every human being agrees it's okay to kill people with red hair, if you're not comfortable with that, why aren't you comfortable with that? Could it be because this whole idea of morality as a purely human construct just doesn't work? And if it's not a purely human construct, if that doesn't work, if you don't like that, then might I suggest you've got to look somewhere above, somewhere transcendent, for where morality comes from, maybe even towards a God? Well, you know, I don't want to be dogmatic about it, but I don't see where, in the end, you really have any other option.